This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everyone. This is Brent DeHart here on Newsmakers on KYKN, and thank you for joining us at your noon hour. We appreciate you sticking with us here on local radio. We get local talk, local topics.
Absolutely.
And top of the news this weekend is the erroneous, false, I don't know if it was malicious or not, rumor spread through Facebook about the water quality in the city of Salem and the cytotoxins and so forth. So we're going to put on the air here Mark Bechtel from the city of Salem. He's been our guest in the past, and he's in the Public Works Department. Try to clear this up, and whether or not the city has issued an advisory on the drinking water, or whether all the new filtrations and technologies are there, and how this all started, this rumor. Mark, you with us?
Hello.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for joining us. Right last minute, top of the hour, but I thought it was important enough that we got the word out. Make sure people understand, because I was at a party yesterday, I know, graduation celebration, and someone says, oh, the city of Salem just did issue the alert for, you know, and they were reading about this alert and who should not be drinking the water. What's this up with that?
Well, Friday afternoon, the city began noticing some Facebook posts and other social media postings that were spreading false information. I guess you could call it a social media attack. But there was false information being spread that we were going to issue a water quality advisory, and that's absolutely false. The water is absolutely safe to drink. It was all weekend long. It's safe to drink this morning. We detected a very, very small amount of cyanotoxin at the intake to our water treatment plant on Thursday. But our filtration systems and those chemical treatment systems that I talked to you about at a previous show, they are all working perfectly, and there is no toxin whatsoever coming out of the finished water. So the water that's coming to people's faucets is absolutely clean and safe to drink.
So how does this thing kind of get started? I mean, did someone
Do you post those results on the web on your face or your website?
Well, we wish we knew how these things get started. We don't know if somebody just misheard something or misunderstood. There's a difference between us detecting a toxin and there being enough toxin in the water to cause any problems. Our detection equipment is incredibly sensitive, and we can sense something in the water, but it may not be anywhere close to something that could cause a problem.
Yeah, and there's a big difference between detecting it at the intake, right?
And the outtake.
And then and it goes through the city processing thing. That's completely different. I mean, I want to make sure that everybody hears all of these things. It's like, one, the levels aren't high, and two, that's the intake. That's before it goes through the sand filtration and the chlorine and the charcoal and all these other things.
And we are running the treatment plant, with some increased chlorine. And so even if something were to get through the filters, the chlorine would take care of it, and then we reduce the chlorine down to a level that it normally is at, so that, again, our customers would not taste or sense anything different. It's going to be very difficult for chlorine to get through those systems this summer. Nothing's impossible, but right now we don't have any issues with toxins in the water.
Mark, this is Dave. How often do you run those tests? Every day? Twice a day? Three times a day?
We are running samples every day.
And then one time a day?
One time a day. The process it takes to run those samples takes about 8 hours.
Oh, wow.
You have to take the algae and freeze them and thaw them and freeze them and thaw them and then test the toxin they give off. The process takes about 8 hours, and so we can draw the samples in the morning, and then by late afternoon, early evening, we have the results.
Nice.
All right, so really important that people get that. I mean, I have a feeling that if somebody sees something on Facebook or maybe they Google it and then they don't notice that the news report that they're looking at was from 2018.
Right.
I know I've done that.
Last year,
I'm trying to find
yeah.
information on this person or this activity, and I'm like, oh, wait, that's from 2008. That's not new news, you know, and maybe someone just reposted something that because they were searching for it. I don't know.
That could have been.
Whatever it is, folks. I mean, on the deck yesterday, big gathering, and this person flat out announced that the city had issued a advisory.
Without checking it.
Yeah.
And, oh, well, wow.
Yeah, had issued an advisory and then started reading about what the advisories were for. Mm. And it had to be a date thing, right? Certainly not happening now, right? Mark, we're talking to Mark Bechtel, the City of Salem Public Works, who's been our guest on Newsmakers in the past, and he's our go-to guy to make sure we get the straight scoop.
Darn right. Thank you so much.
Anything else we should know, Mark?
No, the water is absolutely safe to drink.
Okay.
That's what we needed to know for sure.
We appreciate you jumping in and joining us at the top of the hour. Thank you. We'll let you get back to either lunch or working through your lunch, whatever you're doing.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Mark. Have a good day.
Okay. Bye.
It's nice to have community resources like that, and it's nice to have community people that are so approachable.
Yep,
right?
Well,
I just don't know in some of the bigger communities, this and that, and you can just get somebody, you know, not going through a city attorney or a public relations person and blah, blah, blah. But that's good to know. I mean, yeah, we don't want to have a run on drinking water if we don't have to. We don't want Fred Meyer there.
Yeah, they issued a story this morning that it was safe, and it was all good to go. Because of these rumors that were going around on Facebook, like you said, starting Friday.
Those are rumors, folks.
Yes,
those
rumors.
Are rumors. Be sure to verify. It's funny because there's been some news stories in on the talk shows and national about people purposely making fakes of videos. And, you know, we've seen it for years in humor, you know, bad lip sync, you know,
yeah, right.
things like that. But now the deep fakes, they're calling them. But kind of drawing to your attention how easy it's going to be to get misinformation.
Yes.
Or to get something that was intended as parody or sarcasm or comments, you know, and then take it as like it's a news story. So I did that. I wrote something in a Facebook post one time that was just dripping with sarcasm, right? And it was just, I thought it was very up, and then I got blasted. It's at least one or two people on it
because people took it literally.
Hey, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, seriously, people? No, that was ridiculous, you know. Anyway, but as an example of, you just don't know because unless it says this is parody at the top,
right?
This
disclaimer,
is a joke, yeah. You know,
don't try this at home.
It is a concern. What was there was one on Game of Thrones, so about Game of Thrones, where the star had supposedly done this narration apologizing for the wacky whole last season.
Wow.
And so, but now, you know, we're going to see things. We've seen it out of Nancy Pelosi's mouth, where they manipulated the audio to make her sound like she wasn't all there.
Right. It can be done.
My goodness, folks. Well, how are we going to know what's true and what's not true? We do have to be diligent, and we can't just jump, especially if it sounds like something we want to believe in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where they grab, and it doesn't matter if you're far right, far left. They're going to grab something you want to believe in and then manipulate, create. I mean, Photoshop is just the tip of the iceberg.
Exactly.
Now they're Photoshop and audio shopping and everything else. And
Gotta do your homework.
The deep fakes. All right, folks. No drinking water issue in the city of Salem.
Every
jurisdiction that the city of Salem provides. So don't worry about that. Drink away. We all need more water. All right, we're gonna take our first break. We're gonna come back. I'd like, because we're gonna see it in the next couple of weeks. I want to just take a few minutes and try to explain again what cap and trade is, what the cap is, what the trade is, and what it's gonna mean to your wallet. I'm Brent, and this is Dave, and you're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN Salem's Listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. I'm Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and we're talking about cap and trade a little bit, just a little bit, because I want to get to...
Is this going to die eventually?
No, I don't think so. Here's the thing about our legislature, folks. They have to adjourn by June 30th, right? And a lot of times they try to get out a little bit earlier. But it's the 17th of June today. Mm-hmm. And so they got 13 days, got less than 2 weeks. So this is going to be fast and furious. You're going to have some guest hosts this week. So I don't know if we're going to keep up with the news, but sure, we're going to have some guest hosts, some guests. Guest host guests, how about that?
Guest host guests.
And then it just goes so fast in these last 2 weeks. All the things that have been kind of lingering and out there, they're going to have to put to bed or it dies until next February. And before the hour's out, folks, we're going to talk about expanded family leave law, the family leave and how they're going to fund that and when it's going to take effect and what that means for small and medium-sized businesses and, frankly, everybody who's employed in Oregon. It's going to cover everybody who's employed in Oregon. So absolutely material to what's going to happen coming up. So cap and trade, but that's what we need to be watching for on a day-to-day basis. Is it going to, because they anticipate it's going to get a floor vote in the House and a floor vote in the Senate, obviously in the next 13 days. And we know the governor is highly favorable, right?
Wow.
All right, folks, the cap part. They want to cap the carbon emissions. They want to use some factor, some number, I guess it's a sum, not a factor of all the carbon emissions created by polluters, people that create carbon emissions, right?
Not us breathing,
and cap
right?
Them. No, you get to stop. You know, you need to breathe 20% less, Dave. You need and then in 5 years, you need another 20% less. And,
wow.
No, just kidding. Anyway, I'm going to cap it at a set level, and then that cap goes down over time. That's the cap part of cap and trade, folks. They're going to cap our carbon emissions in the state of Oregon. All right? So everyone's on board with that. Not on board, but you get it. So they mean industry, power plants, right? People who produce natural gas and gasoline and all these things. I wish they could include forest fires, and we could just charge all the environmentalists that won't let us manage the forest for the carbons that release when we have forest fires. We'll just all right. That's the cap part, and it goes down over time. If they can't get under the cap, then they effectively are fined. They don't call it a fine, but you have to buy the credits. You get buy or trade, and that's the trade part of the cap and trade. So if you are a diesel, refiner or distributor, this so forth, or you're an industry that burns things, or you're a natural gas fired power plant, you can't get under the trade because you can't get under the cap because you're still providing power to Portland,
right?
For instance, in the case of the Boardman plant in Eastern Oregon, that's burning natural gas kind of thing. Actually, coal, it's transitioning to natural gas. If you can't get it, then you have to pay. You got to pay into the state. And that is their...
money-grabbing scheme.
That is the whip. That's the stick.
Yeah.
To try to get people to then invest in ways to economically make it unattractive or not feasible for them to continue to burn fossil fuels, right?
So
that's really what they want to do. It's
forcing businesses out of Oregon again.
Forcing businesses to adapt and not burn carbon, right?
Yeah.
And some of those credits or those charges, those monies can flow and be traded to companies that are doing new technologies that are have a lower footprint for carbon.
Clean.
Right? Clean. Yeah. Clean energy.
Clean energy.
Clean energy, clean technologies, or just a technology that reduces the use of the energy need and all these things. So
which
drive
also
funds to where they want it to go, and then drive investments and seed money and so forth and subsidies into new clean technologies, and then punitively punish people who are creating the carbon footprint.
Which also raises your energy.
Oh, yeah.
For your electricity.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, folks.
For your house.
Don't anybody tell you.
Yeah, it's
going to
raise all your bills.
That's it. Don't let anybody tell you that they're just going to tax Northwest Natural, right? Mm-hmm.
They're going to pass it on to you.
Don't you think that's going to show up in your bill, folks?
Yes.
Don't let anybody say, who's going to pay? Shell is going to pay, and Exxon's going to pay, and, Mike, No, they're not. They're going to pass it on to your price of gasoline. I think they estimate at least 15 cents a gallon.
Wow.
Kind of impact. So
they're making it attractive now with lower prices.
And and that way it's a trickle-down. It's a trickle-down effect because we'll be discouraged from driving our gasoline-powered vehicles on vacation or otherwise. We just won't go to the coast because we know we're destroying the planet.
From my cold, dead hand. They can try and pry my car.
All right, so watch the news carefully, folks, in the next couple of weeks as this tries to run the gauntlet from the House to the Senate. Higher obstacles in the Senate.
Yeah.
Tougher margin for the Democrats. You have at least one Democrat against it, and Betsy Johnson.
Good.
And so that's going to be a tougher hurdle. But we saw this happen with the Student Success Act. Is that what they call it? The education package, which was really the new gross receipts tax.
Oh, that one.
So the $1 billion a year new tax.
Yes, that and one.
That wasn't going. It wasn't going. Wasn't going. Back room. Okay, we reached a deal. Boom, it passes.
Wow.
Right? And the Republicans said, well, no, it was, and that wasn't the Republicans. It was AOI, Associated Oregon Industries. Thank you. The business group.
Oh, okay.
So one of the major business groups basically threw all of the rest of the business groups under the table. So they went in the back room and says, hey, will you drop this and this? And will you make these concessions? And then we're not going to fight it anymore. And as soon as they said, we're not going to fight it anymore, it gave people cover. It gave people political cover to pass this thing through with no Republican votes and so forth. But it happened just like that.
Yes, it did.
Does that work over the radio when you snap your fingers just like that? Thank you, Dave.
Yeah.
I need a sound effects guy. anyway, and we got to watch for the cap and trade as well. What might be given up or what might kill it? What might kill it?
We should all call and kill it.
Yeah,
can that happen?
Who are you going to call?
Call your representative.
Did you
email your representative, because this is going to raise your energy bills for your house.
There was an article last week. Yes. Yeah. Back to
come on.
Who are you going to call? Article last week about the unions, the public employee unions, which we should talk a lot about here on Newsmakers, but about what are they going to do and who they're going to support now that some of their Democrats, who they thought they had in their pockets, voted on some of these PERS reforms and voted yes on the sacred cow.
Well, it has to be done.
I think that was probably the representatives and the senators' responses. It has to be done.
It does have to be done.
And so, but that doesn't mean the unions liked it.
Too bad.
Who voted against us, and will they recruit new candidates? Will they unseat anybody who dares to vote something that's contrary to the best interests of the public employee union leaders?
Well, those representatives are supposed to represent everyone, not just the unions.
So undue influence in politics, I think, all of us see it, and we typically see it with the other party.
Uh-huh.
But when is it so blatantly obvious that everybody has to see it, right?
Yeah.
When is it? I don't know. I don't see it when they say, well, President Trump owns a Washington, D.C. hotel, or his organization
so?
Does. So that, and I'm like, that's what I say. I'm like, so what? You think some hotel nights, even if it's wealthy, you really think he's going to change his public policy because some Slovenian diplomats stayed at his hotel in D.C.
No.
or some Russians?
We all got to sleep somewhere.
What? Anyway, so I don't see it. And maybe the people are screaming, oh, I'm just an ignorant moron. But when it is, we're going to take a legislator out, even though they're a Democrat and they've been there for X number of terms, because of this vote, that even though everybody in the state acknowledges that PERS needs to have fixes, are they going to see that? Are they going to really vote for the replacement legislator or candidate? Right?
Right.
Is that going to be blatant enough for you that this is self-serving and this is, we need to own the elected officials so that they never vote against the public employee union's position? How blatant and how ugly does it have to get? Folks, most people are in the middle. Most people are not on the 10% fringe. And I like to think that the vast bulk of people can see that PERS is an issue, PERS needs fixed, and somebody needs to make some hard decisions. They need to be allowed to make a hard decision that doesn't benefit the public employee unions, folks, if they're Democrats, right?
Yeah. Well, I think these hard choices that they made will benefit the employee unions.
That's the reason, yeah.
In the end, because if they didn't make these choices now, there wouldn't be enough money down the road for the rest of them.
Exactly. Yeah. You do need to make it viable. I mean, you can't just go down the road.
If a state goes bankrupt, then what?
Yeah.
Right?
They're a world of hurt, yeah.
We're almost at that stage now. They're passing a $1 billion tax on your business, and now they're talking about the cap and trade, which is going to raise your energy bills. I mean, how bad does it have to get?
Worse than this, apparently.
Apparently.
And yeah. It'll be interesting to see. And there's more and more criticism and more challenges in terms of ethics and some of the actions of the governor to see if she has a re-election campaign. And Oregon would again elect somebody who's not doing a very good job, who is clouded in some ethics concerns like they did with John Kitzhaber.
Mm.
All right. Well, we're going to come back. We're going to talk about the family leave law. It's going to affect everybody who works in Oregon. That's you folks. You might like it. You might like it if you have family members who have illnesses or if you have an illness or an injury. And you might hate it because there'll be one more line item on your paycheck when you look at your pay stub, which if you haven't done lately, do. It's going to be a deduction. And you're going to pay into this.
Hmm.
And let's flesh it out. I'm Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and you're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN.
Len Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center and Color Tile of Salem.
Welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart, and as promised, we're going to talk about the family leave law that's being passed. We think it's going to pass. It's going to be 13 days.
Isn't there one already in place?
No. No, well, yeah, there's a federal family leave law.
Yeah, it's already in place. Why is the state getting involved in another one?
They're going to produce basically a new employee benefit slash right, like workers' comp, or protection, I would think the advocates would call it a protection, so that families that are hurt by extended illness and either employees or their families, and they need to leave the workforce for a period of time and take care of them, that their jobs are protected and they have some income stemming from that. Just as you get unemployed, right now, if you look at your paychecks, folks, there's a little bit of work unemployment insurance contribution. Every employer kicks in, and there's state unemployment and there's federal unemployment. There's both.
Oh, wow.
And so there's two different funds, and those are some of the payroll taxes that every employer has to pay. So that money goes into the fund, and when you are unemployed for a period of time, you get laid off, like most people have at some point in their lives, you get laid off, you go on unemployment, and you get a bridge to your next level of employment, right?
Right.
So we don't really challenge the existence of that anymore, or that that should exist anymore. So now we're looking into the future and thinking, hey, your wife, husband, sometimes a parent, gets a cancer diagnosed, they have to go through intensive chemotherapy, and you need to care for them. There's a stroke, you know, something serious, right? And you need to care for them, but how are you going to do it when you have to be at work 9 to 5?
Right.
How are you going to do it when you're going to be working 40 hours a week? There's just no way to do it. And so you quit your job, but then there's no money to pay the rent.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what this family leave thing is about. And it would be new. It would be a payroll tax. It's going to be shared by the employee and the employer. So that's interesting. Here in Marion County, folks, there is a 0.1% of your wages already being taxed to support transit in a new way.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's an itty-bitty tiny amount, but it's there. And this would be the employee is going to pay 60% of the cost of this program, and the employer has to kick in the other 40%. So another tax on business, small, medium, and large, but also participation from the employees for the benefit. So that was part of the negotiating thing, of course. Originally, that was going to be split, and there was some negotiations, and employers would now just be 40% of the contributions. Another big thing about this is, should it pass this legislative session and get signed by Governor Brown, it's still not going to go into effect for a few years yet, for almost 5 years. So I think they'd start collecting money in 2023, and then the benefit to file would be available the following year. So family and medical reasons. House Bill 2005. You have to have made $1,000. So you have to be, that's pretty minimal amount of employment.
Wow.
Right? But up to 18 weeks. 18 weeks. That is a lot. I mean, 3 months is 12 weeks.
Wow, okay.
Well, 13 weeks. 3 months is 13 weeks, so it's more than the quarter of the year, and another 5 weeks. 18 weeks. Care for a new child, so you can take maternity and paternity leave and so forth. So serious health problems, a difficult pregnancy, you know, if you're in bed rest and things like that, or your spouse is. It's going to be...
And so how does the employer hold your job? Hire somebody temporary?
You know, it's funny you should ask that, because that's exactly the question he's asked.
Yeah.
NFIB, we've had Anthony Smith here from NFIB, and they still staunchly oppose this. Some industry groups, some labor groups, you know, are getting behind it. And at least they claim that there's some bipartisan support. However, NFIB, National Federation of Independent Business, I'm a fan of NFIB. But they're like, no, how is a small business supposed to survive?
Right.
I mean, how many employees at KYKN? So we'll say less than 20, maybe less than 15. For the NFIB's constituency, they might have less than 5. So you're going to have 5 people working full time. You take away 20% of the workforce. How are they going to function? Folks, you get that? How are they going to function? Because the law is going to require them that they hold their job open for 4 or 5 months. How are you going to do that?
Hire temporary?
And you're going to hire somebody and say, oh, you're going to be fired in 5 months when so-and-so might or might not come back from their family illness.
There's that too.
Right? Because life can change. Maybe you're caring for a spouse and the spouse passes away, and then there's a life insurance policy, or there's a grieving period, or there's care. You know, there's so many parameters. And the small employer doesn't even know if they're coming back, folks. They don't really know. And how do you plan for that? And then you're going to hire somebody for 5 months and lay them off, and then you get hit on your experience for your unemployment. So if you're not familiar,
wow,
get this. You know, employer pays unemployment insurance, but it's like your car insurance. You get 3 tickets, your car insurance goes up, right?
Pretty much.
You get a few different accidents. Your experience, it's the same with workers' compensation, folks. If there are claims, then they charge you more for insurance. So you're going to hire somebody, you're going to lay them off. Oh, you laid somebody off, Dave. You laid them off. Hmm. So now they're on unemployment. So now we're going to add that to your experience rating, and you might pay higher rates on all of your payroll for the next 3 years because you laid somebody off that you hired to accommodate family leave.
Which is
gotta connect
a new
all these
mandated,
dots.
Mandated law.
Yeah, we got to connect all these dots.
Wow.
I mean, it gets to the point where somebody who wants, I don't know if you've ever known somebody this, but there's a lot of people. You go around town and patronize your small businesses. Some of those people could make the same amount of money without all the risks by working for somebody else, right? Okay. I know I can think at the top of my head somebody who owns a business, but they take on all the stress and all the responsibility and all of the danger, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
But they're not making any more money if they work for somebody else. So where's the reward in that? And then you take that person, and they have to work the job. They have to work the cashier, right?
Yeah.
They got to work the cash register, or they're the ones directly servicing the clients, but they are doing it. They're the person. Well, it's getting so complicated, folks, that you need a new person to handle all of the red tape, as Dave Bourne likes to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
So now we need to administer not just unemployment, but Social Security and workers' comp and family leave. And there are a lot of small companies that struggle because they don't have an HR department.
This is true. You have to farm it out.
It's one thing if you're Nike and you have a whole team of HR people. It's one thing if you're a university. It's one thing if you're a large company. But you get a certain size, and you're like, well, now I need a person. Now I need somebody on the payroll just to manage all of the regulations coming.
Yes.
You know, it have to do with having employees.
This is part of the problem that I don't like about government, is they pass all these regulations and laws, but they don't take any of them away. Or they try and fix something and it makes it more convoluted, more red tape.
So we were talking about Anthony Smith, NFIB, his quote in the Salem Reporter. There's not a way to craft this policy where employers aren't valuable. There's not a way to craft this policy where employers aren't without valuable employees for certain amounts of time.
Mm-hmm.
Two or three people, is, and one of them's the owner, maybe two of them the owners, and you want to do without that? How are you going to get through? Let's say you have a bed and breakfast. Let's say you have a wedding site, and mm-hmm. there's a season, and you're going to have to go through a season without this person, or you're going to have to hold a job and then forced to hire him back in a month in which it's not high season and you don't really have the work. It's all these things that, you know, people are well-intentioned, and it's the exact same thing with the paid sick leave.
Right.
Paid sick leave. Well-intentioned folks, then there's always unintended consequences.
Always.
I know an employer said, hey, well, the first thing we did was we changed our employee handbook and took away vacation, and we called it sick leave.
Wow.
That's what they did. Like, well, all the employees now, they have sick leave, but they don't have vacation. Like, way to go, legislature. Way to solve that problem. Right?
Wow.
It's just like the mindset. We talk a lot about this at the legislature. The mindset that everybody can afford everything. They're out of touch.
Yes.
They should be able to predict a month out. I mean, I've been a retailer and employed entry-level workers, and we schedule them once a week like clockwork.
Right.
Well, somebody had an employer that was not that good, and they're calling employees and on their day off or working long shifts or whatever. So the legislature, we need to jump into this and make rules that affect every employer in the state of Oregon, right? It's like that fix is bigger than the problem, people.
Yes.
You don't have one or two or three bad employers and then have a statewide from Idaho to the ocean, and everybody has to do it this way. And that's what the predictive scheduling thing came out of. They want every employee to be able to rely on a predictive scheduling that goes out a month. I'm sorry, folks, but things having to do with working with the public, you know, be they events, be they retail, be it weather dependent, all sorts of things.
Yeah, weather dependent. Forget about it.
All right. There's one thing, and trying to encourage people to be good employers and be good to their employees. And it's another thing to say, oh, no, you need to schedule them like this. And when they start, I mean, they've gone down this road in California in terms of telling you how many hours you can schedule somebody. Like the quintessential example is the 312s.
Right.
Somebody wants to work 312s, which is fantastic for some people's lifestyles. And some people in the legislature would take that away. All right. So family leave law, folks, it's coming up. You're going to watch for it to get passed in the House, passed in the Senate, signed by Governor Brown. And then we're going to start paying for that in our paychecks in 2023.
Wow.
But that delay was part of the compromises. They say it's a national trend.
In case we can fix it?
I could not find, and maybe I missed it, whether or not Oregon is the first, the third, the fifth that's going to have this, but they say it's a national trend to have family medical leave in each state kind of thing.
Still thought it was a federal thing.
Yeah, and federal, but it's limited. It's more limited to how many employees. And that is another thing, is they want the people behind this want everybody covered. Not just big companies, not just medium, but even the small companies.
Uh-huh.
Another compromise was that companies of 25 employees or less would not be putting in that 40% of, you know, the cost. So they wouldn't have to pay in. So they are saving that cost for the smaller employer.
But the employee is still paying?
But the employees are still eligible for that 18 weeks.
Huh.
They're still eligible to get the family leave, even though the smaller employers aren't paying in.
So where does that money come from?
Apparently comes from the larger employers,
wow.
Employers, right? And all the payroll taxes.
I'd be screaming about that.
So it doesn't take away the whole hold the job open thing.
Uh-huh.
Especially, you know, heck, I have a closely held family business in my circle. And it's like we take 10 weeks to train somebody to be competent.
Yeah.
And that is an extraordinary cost. I mean, it's a lot to add one person to a crew of five and double them up. So you're paying for six and only getting five for like 12 weeks. That's a lot of money. That's why turnover of employees is very, very expensive in business. Turnover of expertise and employees and retraining, very, very expensive. So, wow. So go ahead and spend 2 months, 3 months, 5 months, apparently, getting somebody up to speed where they're of value. And then you need to be fired now because I have to hire John and or Susie back.
Wow.
All right. So not mal-intentioned, but perhaps not all that functional well. There's definitely some problems. All right, stick with us. This is Newsmakers. I'm Brent DeHart with Dave Morin, and it's 1430 KYKN.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is sponsored by Hamblin's Nursery.
Welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart. We're talking about things happen to do in Oregon and happen to do with the Mid-Willamette Valley. So thanks for listening to local talk.
That's right.
Here in the Mid-Willamette Valley and Salem and Kaiser. Hey, this is in the Portland metro area, actually Gresham area, but actually it's a statewide thing and it's a national thing in the Supreme Court. And just want to touch on it and talk about why it's important. So in Gresham, there was the bakery that got sued because they didn't want to make a cake for a same-sex couple.
Right.
And lost that case and lost it in appeal and lost it at the Oregon Supreme Court. And the decision, basically, the U.S. Supreme Court has handed it back to Oregon and said, we want you to reconsider. So, and this is in light of a recent case, of course, was in the news several months ago, of a very similar Colorado case. Since the U.S. Supreme Court weighed in on this Colorado case, now there is U.S. Supreme Court case that has been decided. They have, I'm skipping on this word here. Someone scream at the radio trying to get this this word in my mind.
A precedent?
Yeah.
Precedent.
Thank you. Yeah. U.S. Supreme Court precedent. Wow. Yes. Is it Monday, Dave?
It is
Monday. All right. So, but now there's a precedent to cite, and they're going to take the case and they're going to hand it back. In the Oregon case, the bakers lost. They were fined like $135,000, which is pretty harsh for not making a cake and so forth. And they're not even in business anymore. But again, it weighs in to, and we talked about this having to do with Oregon Supreme Court case last week, is, who becomes a judge really makes a difference.
It does.
It really makes a difference in our society. I'm torn on this. I'm going to argue both sides.
Really?
Yeah, with the cake maker.
All right.
Because I am defensive on behalf of Christians in America, people of faith in America.
Yes.
Any people of faith in America. And
should be your right.
In the phrase in the Constitution, because everybody wants to talk about no establishment, but the second half of it being prohibit the free exercise thereof. And so for the federal government to tell a religious entity that it doesn't matter what your religious beliefs are, you need to provide a contraception, you need to fund abortions or all these things. And I think people should have a right to their free exercise of their religious beliefs. I believe they're deep-seated. They come to the core of a value system of an entire society. And not everybody shares them, but people have a right to have them. And so I look at the cake and I'm like, okay, so maybe you see this person as a bigot. You won't make a cake. You don't like lesbian couples. You're a bigot and so forth. But why do you want to force them to take your money? It's like you're going to fight through the Supreme Court to fight for your right to give this bigot your money?
Yeah, that makes no sense.
I don't get that fight, for one. And two, I think, if it challenges their religious belief and they don't want to support it, I kind of get that. You shouldn't be forced to participate in something that goes against a core fundamental religious belief. A lot of people aren't religious, and certainly a lot of people in the media, right? And they seem to mock anybody who has a faith background or a belief system on an old book. So there's that. And I want to fight for their right to believe in what they believe in and stick to what their Bible to use a generic and specific term.
Yeah, whatever it is.
Right? Their guidebook from God to be able to say, no, I follow this, and this is what we believe in, and this is how I'm going to live my life. So they're not forcing the lesbian couple not to get married. So I get that. However, what's the difference, Dave?
Okay.
Of someone walking into a diner in Alabama and saying, no, you can't sit there because I don't like black people. Right? Isn't it the exact same kind of discrimination? I don't like what you're doing. I don't like what you are.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't, you're not going to be served here. And then it really is a civil rights issue. And it really is, oh, you know, I had this discussion with myself and my somewhat liberal brother, actually.
Really?
And it's like, I get it, you know. Like, I'm like, why would you fight to do business with people you don't like and don't want to do business with, right? On the other hand, because it's exactly the same, it says, you know, a sign. I mean, does it go back to 1950s and a sign outside the diner says whites only? Can you have a sign outside the bakery that says breeders only, to use a slang term for...
Can't believe you went there.
I can't believe how many different words there are for people who, you know, are a man and woman. There's, you know, it's a slang term in the gay community for procreators, right? We're the breeders. Breeders.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Also cisgendered, if we want a newer word that's politically correct, or we can just say heterosexual.
Right.
But heterosexuals only in this bakery.
So
white people only in this lunch counter. Is it the same?
No. Well, what happened to the business's right to refuse service to anyone? What happened to that sign?
There's protected classes, right? My question is, because if I had a diner... Because
if they had that sign in the window, we refuse the right, or reserve the right to refuse service to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
That's the business's choice.
It is, but they're protected classes. And that the sign, does not protect them from...
So the sign went bye-bye? No.
Well, the sign can exist. That doesn't mean anything. Just like when you park in a parking garage and they say they're not responsible.
Right.
That doesn't mean they're actually not responsible. That means they want you to believe that they're not responsible.
Fake advertising. What is that?
They're trying to limit their liabilities, right? They want to limit how many times they're getting in trouble. But yeah, don't believe everything you read. They can have a sign.
Even though
up there.
The sign's posted?
Yes.
That makes no sense.
We're not responsible for loss to stolen goods. But if you could prove that they were negligent, then they are responsible. You can't declare I am not responsible for negligence.
I have to state right now, I'm not responsible for anything that you say.
Yeah. that's for sure. Well,
I cannot be responsible for whatever Brent says.
So that's the civil rights question. And it's going to be interesting. It goes back to Oregon. And now the Oregon Supreme Court or appellate court, one of them is going to have to handle that case again. That's going to be an interesting case. But do you get that?
Yeah, I got it.
All right. So there's other things happening in the legislature. Something having to do with manufactured housing, which we'll have to tackle on another day. But that is, again, the question is going to be, when is it too much? When is like, oh, that's a good idea, but you really, it's not something the government needs to do. We're tackling that all the time here on Newsmakers.
Yes, we
right?
are.
All right. Hey, thanks for joining us on this Monday. I hope you had a great day and it's a beautiful day living in the Willamette Valley. I'm Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and this is 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
We'll see you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Fenton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.